Welcome to the program. This is Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard again around the table. Our man Brad May, our man Doug McClain, and the headline that hit the airwaves yesterday, gentlemen, as we went off the air. Bill Peters, the new head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll talk plenty about that today. We'll talk to Ken Daniels, Red Wings play-by-play voice. Everything you always want to know about Bill Peters, but we're afraid to ask. Also, we'll talk to Dan Marr, director of NHL Central Scouting. The NHL draft is 1 week away. So there were four, Doug. Now there are three coaching vacancies. Florida, what do you hear? What do you know?
Well, you know what? I've been saying all along that Gerard Gallant would be the head coach of Florida, and I thought it would be a great move. And, you know, of course, I've known him since he was 8 years of age, and I actually taught him in school.
I was going to say, you were his teacher.
I was his teacher. And then I had him in Columbus for 5 or 6 years. Terrific guy, and you know, Bylsma was in the mix there. There's no doubt about that. But I don't have any doubt that Gerard will be the coach of the Florida Panthers. So I'm thrilled for him. I'm happy for the Panthers. They got an excellent guy. So there's no doubt in my mind he'll be the guy. So it'll be fun to see Gerard as he's paid his dues. Assistant coach, went back and won a Memorial Cup.
And two CHL coaches of the year.
Right, and then went to the Montreal Canadiens as assistant coach and was very instrumental in helping them. Montreal will miss this guy a lot. He's a terrific person, number one. And I had the luxury of coaching him in the NHL in Detroit for a few years. I'll never forget, I was up behind the bench in a power play. It was near the end of his career, and I'm behind the bench, and Brian Murray was the coach, and he poked me, he said, "Tell that dummy to put me on the power play." Now, I had a lot. He was getting itchy. Like, he really wanted to be on the power play. And then the final story, and I want you to talk about, there was a game. We were playing the Montreal Canadiens, and he come to the bench, and he said, I'm getting that Swede. I'm getting that Swede next shift I go on the ice. Mm-hmm. I'm getting him. And I said, "Gerard, that's Lyle Oderline. He's not Swedish."
And he's tough.
And at that minute, Randy McKay dropped the gloves and Oderline and him, and he said, "Thanks for the tip."
Yeah. Look at his nameplate. He said, Odellin. Oh, he sounds Swedish. I'm gonna go after that
but
guy.
But anyway, I really believe he'll be the guy.
Gerard Gallant, there you go, Florida Panthers. An official announcement will be made after the weekend. Monday, we believe, specifically, where Dale Tallon will announce a new head coach. And according to Doug McClain, it will be Gerard Gallant, now ex of the Montreal Canadiens. You would have played against Gerard, and I would imagine that, considering, Brad, that you are both robust, let's just say, energetic hockey players, I'm guessing more than once, or maybe even just once, who knows, the gloves did not stay on.
Well, you know what? When I was getting drafted, they asked you a lot of questions, these questionnaires, and, you know, who do you want to be like? What kind of player do you think you are? You know, if you can ever reach a certain level, who's that guy? And on my list, I had Rick Tocchet. I had Cam Neely, two guys I looked up to. Shane Corson was another one. Mm-hmm. He played in the same junior club that I did, the Hamilton Steelhawks, where I was drafted.
Played for LaForge.
For Bill LaForge. So I had an affinity for Shane Corson. And, of course, I fought Shane one of my first fights in the NHL, which was awesome. Probably the toughest fight I ever had in the NHL, probably just for the moment itself at the Forum. Montreal Forum, we were losing 7-2. And what a great moment. But the other guy on my list was Gerard Gallant, Detroit Red Wing, number 17. Mm-hmm. My first year in the NHL in Buffalo, you know, all hell breaks loose in the corner. It was at the end of my shift. I'm standing in front of the net, and, of course, Gerard Gallant's there. And we've now picked a partner. We're going to fight. But I can't breathe. I'm tired. And I looked at him, and I said, "Can you give me a second? I swear to God."
Really?
And you can see it on YouTube, whatever. I said, "Can you give me a second?" He goes, "Yep." So I leaned over on my knees. I'm trying to take as many breaths as I could. And he's like, "Are you ready?" And I'm like, no, give me a couple more. Because there's fights going on, whatever. No referees around us. And he's like, "Okay, take your time whenever you're ready. Whenever you're ready." Sure enough, he's like, "Are you ready to go?" And I'm like, "Okay, let's get her going." And we start fighting. And it was a good fight. You know, probably ended in a draw. And it was an awesome moment for me in the NHL. First of all, people that are watching on the periphery, they think fighting is so barbaric and there's no honor in the fight or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you, Gerard Gallant honestly has the utmost, or I have the utmost respect for him. gave me that opportunity. He let me rest. He could have pumped me there, you know, because I was so tired at the end of the shift. But it's an amazing fraternity of guys, and there is a lot of respect amongst these guys that do that job. And I'll never forget that moment. So years later, I run into Gerard when he's on the bench in Columbus, and we actually laughed about it and had a good chuckle. But I couldn't be more happy for that guy.
Yep. Yeah. So anyway, and yeah, so the jobs are filling, and obviously Peters gets the job in Carolina. I don't know Bill Peters, but obviously he's a guy that lots of people are after. And so, you know, it's Ronnie Francis steps up, and, you know, there's a ton of talk that Samuelson was going to get the job, which would have been a good choice too. So
he interviewed.
Yeah.
As for Bill Peters, I mean, that's a name that popped up, I suppose, in the last week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, as a significant candidate. For a couple of different positions, how much, sort of modern-day Bill Parcells in hockey, how much do we chalk this up to the Mike Babcock effect? I mean, you're standing next to Mike Babcock, coaching with Mike Babcock, helped Todd McClellan get a job in San Jose, Paul McClain in Ottawa. How much is this the Red Wings effect, do you think?
I believe it's huge. I think Mike Babcock's got a lot of respect in the NHL, certainly, you know, on the coaching ranks, and with the success he's had, not only internationally, but with the Detroit Red Wings this past season, the way he did. He didn't do it alone. Obviously, Bill Peters is a big part of that. But my question, and no disrespect to Bill Peters, but a lot of times, or lately, it seems that these GMs are reaching out and getting these individuals to coach their team that are not the guys that, you know, everyone else are thinking about. You know, like Dan Bylsma is available, Ole Samuelson, who's been around the ranks and stuff. Is it these guys trying to be the smartest guy in the room to actually find that diamond in the rough in a Bill Peters to be that guy? And it very well could end up being that. But we saw it with Boucher. We saw it, you know, we've seen it a number of times.
Glenn Gullitson.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? It's
Davis Payne.
It's really, you know, when you sit down and say, okay, I'm gonna hire a coach, you know, you get advice from lots of people, and there's no doubt if you're a general manager and you get a call from Mike Babcock or Ken Holland, mm-hmm. I mean, they're two of the most respected guys in the game, you know? So does that enhance a guy's chances? Most definitely it does. Most definitely it does. If I'm looking for a coach and Mike Babcock phones and gives me a recommendation and Ken Holland, mm-hmm. you take advice from these guys because they're top. They're the top guys in their profession.
It's almost, it's almost as if Detroit has become a university in a lot of ways, graduating not just coaches.
Jeff Blashill's there.
Jeff Blashill's, and there were teams that were calling for Blashill, but Ken Holland, I guess, has Blashill in GR. Won't let anyone talk to him. I guess you want to call that Mike Babcock insurance in case he doesn't come back, one more year left on his deal. But it's not just coaches that the Red Wings are placing. It's general managers. It's Steve Yzerman in Tampa. It's Jim Neal in Dallas. That really has become, in a lot of ways, hockey U around the NHL.
And you know what? Some people, like Ken Holland, stepped up with Blashill and said, I'm protecting myself here. He's the guy I want. So he altered his deal so that Blashill stays. And the same as he did for Jimmy Neal, you know, I will give you X amount more dollars.
Yep.
And essentially, I'll overpay you. But for that, you can't talk to anybody for a year. And you stay with me for the year. Not unlike what Dean Lombardi's doing. Dean Lombardi's trying to protect his look, when you build an organization and all of a sudden you lose top people, it affects you. So Dean has stepped up and is protecting himself by keeping his people. He lost Hextall, you know, and that, you know, who was an important guy. It's really hard to hold guys back unless you make them guarantees that, hey, we'll look after you. You will get a chance to be the head coach here if you don't go now. Because John Stevens probably would have got a job. You know?
Well, there were teams that were interested.
Sure.
Not sure about a position for sure, but there were teams that wanted, and we would think that Vancouver might be top of that list to talk to John Stevens.
Right, and I'm going to throw out a name in Vancouver that is a guy who has really, really impressed Vancouver in the interview process thus far. Scott O'Neill will interview Monday. I hear Willie Desjardins will probably interview in Vancouver Tuesday. Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson from Portland, who has done a good job in Portland. Don't be surprised if that name's in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to get the job, but I know that they're very, very impressed with Mike Johnson.
So when I was in Vancouver, Mike Johnson was the assistant coach with Mark Crawford.
Yep.
And, you know, he came from Hockey Canada.
Yep.
This guy is a smart, astute man. A very, very good communicator. Actually really, really liked Mike Johnson. So when I was on that team in 2003-04, Trevor Linden was on our team as well. And so Trevor knows Mike very, very well and has a ton of respect for him like the rest of us. So I can see that one happening because Mike has gone back. He went to L.A. with Mark as well, but not backwards, but he's run a great program in Portland.
Yeah.
Travis Green was his assistant coach, took over when they had those issues in Portland 2 years ago and went to the Memorial Cup. And Travis Green is the head coach of their minor league team.
And I'm
there's a lot of synergies there, and they like Travis.
And I'm hearing a lot of good things about Travis as a potential coach moving ahead.
Yeah.
So really, like, you know, I'm not saying Mike's going to get the job. I wouldn't know that. All I know is they were very impressed with him. So there's some good candidates for Jim Benning, you know, and Mike has moved into that group. He's right there for that job, which is great.
If you were handicapping it, you're making a totem pole of what Vancouver wants by way of whether it's Willie Desjardins, whether it's Mike Johnson, whether it's, I don't know, take your Dan Bylsma, whomever. How would that totem pole look? Who would be top of that list right now? Because people have been marrying Willie Desjardins to Vancouver now for weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's obviously the Medicine Hat connection with Trevor.
Old Tigers.
You know, and I don't know how it's going to turn out. I really don't. And I think it's open. I don't think there's... I think Willie is in there pretty solid, but I don't know how it's going to turn out because when guys go in for interviews and they blow guys away, it can change it. The downside of all this coach talk is 34 of them have been fired in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, guys. 34 coaches have been fired in the last 3 years.
You know who nailed it coming out of the lockout of 2005? Pat Quinn. Pat Quinn, when the salary cap went in, said, you know, it may be a great thing for the business of the NHL, but for my selfish perch as a head coach, this is bad for coaches because you can't buy your way out of mistakes. It's difficult to trade money in, money out. The guys that will suffer will be the head coaches.
Yeah.
And Pat Quinn was right on the money.
Yeah. So, you know, but it's exciting time for a lot of guys. And, you know, so it's a fun time.
Gerard Gallant, Florida. That's great news for your former coach in Columbus. Now, how is things, Doug, talk to me here both as someone who has interviewed most recently with the Pittsburgh Penguins for a head coaching position and also interviewed coaches for a head coaching position. Has anything changed in the process? Or is it the same now as it was when you ran the Jackets?
I think it's the same. You know, what I did was always spend at least, I would have a guy fly in the evening and spend the whole next day with him and then have dinner with the owner the next night. So you'd meet, you know, guy comes in, so you, let's say he comes in at 5 o'clock, you have dinner that night, and then you meet the whole next day, and just involved in that meeting is showing him the facilities, showing him the bit of the city while you're talking the entire day. Then you spend time in your office talking about systems and personnel and how he would handle the group and specific questions. I don't think it's changed dramatically. Some general managers don't do that. Some general managers spend 2 hours with a guy or sometimes it's just a phone call and saying, I'm offering you the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it varies from GM to GM. So that's really how I did it. And, you know,
let me ask you as a player then, Brad, you're Brad May, free agent. How much stock do you put in who's coaching the team when you're making your choice where to play the next season?
I think it's a big part of the decision. Obviously, it's not all of it. I think as a player, you want to know where you stand, where you're going to fit in. Of course, you have illusions that, you know, if they think you're a third liner, you're going to pop up and you're going to be able to, you know, score a few early and maybe move up or whatever. So every player has those aspirations. But style, coaching, personalities play a huge factor in guys making decisions. And I remember when I was a free agent at the end of the last lockout, I had a number of teams that I could have signed with in relatively the same contract on a 2-year deal. And there's one decision that I didn't make that I wonder if I made the wrong decision. In the sense, Jacques Lemaire was a coach of the Minnesota Wild, and I had an opportunity to go to Minnesota from Vancouver,
yep.
But it was at the end of the lockout. And Jacques Lemaire is the best coach, the best teacher in the game. And I talked to a lot of players and they said, listen, if you want to learn how to play hockey and learn everything about the X's and O's and positioning and stick and all of that and really become a better hockey player, you have to go to Minnesota. But if you want to have a ton of fun and be robust and be that guy and be a little bit of a wild card, that's not the place for you.
Yeah, it's more buttoned down.
And so right there, the coaching, you know, that I think I maybe made a mistake because he's such a great teacher. On the other hand, I had a lot of latitude with Joel Quenneville in Colorado, who I absolutely love as a coach. And it was a great experience.
Let's pick up that conversation in a second. Bill Peters is now the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, now formerly assistant coach with the Detroit Red Wings. Wings play-by-play voice Ken Daniels joins us on Hockey Central. Ken, first of all, good afternoon. Thanks for doing this. And secondly, a surprise that Bill Peters is now ex of the Detroit Red Wings?
I don't know, surprise, because I'd heard his name and Tom Rennie's name out there for jobs, and he's so well-respected. He worked with the defense and the penalty killing for the Red Wings, did a great job. He's such a great gentleman. I mean, you know, Mike Babcock changed his style somewhat, more accommodating with the kids. But as tough as Mike can be, they always had Bill there and Tom Rennie and two great guys to bounce stuff off. There aren't two better human beings than those two. And I think Bill's going to do a great job. I know that Bill Peters a while ago talked to our staff about a guy like Tyler Johnson, Tampa Bay, just thought, you know, he had him in Spokane and said, this kid's going to be awesome. He's terrific. Loved him. But, you know, he was small at the time and didn't really think he could necessarily do what he's done at this level. So a good eye for talent, too, and a very good teacher. The guys absolutely loved playing for Bill. Could go to him with anything.
Why would Ken Holland have Blashill ahead of him on the depth chart?
Why would he have Blashill ahead of him? Well, Jeff, when he came out of Western, Mike Babcock found him, and who knew he'd be ready and was with Detroit for a year, got the opportunity there. I think Bill had already done, Doug, what he'd been with Rockford, and you talked to the guys with Chicago, another group of players who love playing for Bill Peters. So I don't know if it was so much ahead of him. I think Bill had done the American Hockey League thing already, learned from Mike, wanted to be at the NHL level, and then moved on. Jeff had to go to the American Hockey League, Jeff Blashill, to learn how to run a bench, and he's done that superbly. So I don't really know if he was ahead of him or not.
Well, just I guess when I hear that Blashill doesn't have permission to talk to anybody and Peters does, that's why I would say that. That's all. And maybe it's not accurate.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying, but I think Jeff's up and coming, and the job that he's done with the kids, I just think that Ken Holland doesn't stand in somebody's way, and Bill Peters, who'd been in Rockford, been in Spokane, won a Memorial Cup, I just think he's done his thing already and has earned the right to leave. It's like when I asked Ken about Jim Nill and taking the Red Wing scouts with him, and I said, you know, that's not necessarily the right thing to do. And Ken, who's always been a proponent of trying to get compensation for those who leave, said, look, if scouts want to go, they're good people. I'm not going to stand in their way of advancing. I'd like to be compensated for it, but if they want to go with them, what am I going to do, make them stay?
No, exactly.
Hey, Kenny, when you talk about Jeff Blashill, what kind of coach will he be, you know, heading the bench? Is he a player's coach? Is he a tactician? Is he a father figure who, you know, players can bounce ideas off? And obviously everybody has personal issues. Being the communicator that he is, can you pinpoint what type of guy he will be? Because, you know, we all want to know when we think about head coaches what kind of guys they are.
X and O, bright guy. And I know from day one, the first conversation I had with Jeff Blashill, we were on our plane and I was getting ready to do an early season game for the CCHA at the time for Western Michigan. I didn't really know the players, and I said, who's the players here I should look for? And I gave him the list. I said, Jeff, can you help me out? Just make some notes on him. And he said, all you got to know is this guy. And I said, who's that? He goes, the DeKeyser kid. I said, is that how you say his name? He goes, oh, yeah, Danny DeKeyser. He's going to be a star. Nobody ever heard of him at the time, but Jeff certainly knew him. And the players who played for him, who came up to the Red Wings and Yurko and Tatar and Nyquist, can't speak highly enough of what a great communicator Jeff Blashill is. X and O too, and learned so much from Mike in the year he was there before he went to Grand Rapids. And I know if you guys ever have listened to Jeff Blashill hold a conversation, you'd swear it's Mike Babcock speaking. Not only is it Babcock speak, but just the richness, the tone of the voice. We're going to do something next year on Fox Sports Detroit, and our game is a Blash or Babs, because you can't tell the difference. I swear to you, if you've heard an interview with Jeff Blashill, They're one voice. Different people, but one voice.
Okay, we know you know this, and you know this is a good test for you as to whether you'll tell us the truth. Is Babcock going to get his deal done in Detroit?
I think so, yes. He loves it there. Sure. Could he go to Toronto someday and be the king of Canada if the Maple Leafs ever won a Stanley Cup and you're the head coach? Or Edmonton down the road, going to a new building and a new situation, a young kid? Sure, you're always looking for new challenges. But I know Mike Babcock's not finished with the challenge here. And the kids who've come into the room have changed the dynamic in that room. And Brad knows full well when he was there and you got a lot of veteran guys who can maybe get tired of a voice. He's got a whole new group there. And the bottom line with Babs is as tough as he can be. The core of that team, Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Cronwall, they don't hate him. You know, some guys, they could have hated Scotty Bowman. But you got kids coming in who are hearing a different voice and have done very well under him. And a guy like Luke Glendening, who he's given an opportunity to. And then in a year from now, if not a little bit this year, you're going to have Anthony Mantha. A guy like Thomas Nosek, whom they just signed. There's not really room for the Red Wings to go out and sign a lot of forwards. If Alfredson comes back, they don't have much room for anybody up front. They're pretty much set. Last year, you know, the dynamic changed enough that no one's tired of that voice, so why wouldn't he want to stay?
Kenny, Detroit's a model franchise in the NHL. I had the luxury of finishing my career there. I played my last 15 games pro with the Grand Rapids Griffins and with some of those young guys. Tommy Tatar was on my wing, and such a fine young man. So fun to watch, obviously, but this guy loves the game of hockey. Why is the Detroit Red Wings, why do they do such a good job developing their players in Grand Rapids? I think I know the answer, but Kenny, what do you think that their recipe is there that other teams are trying to emulate?
Well, it is the same style of play for sure. And you asked earlier about, you know, the similarities or differences between Blashill and Babcock. They can talk almost daily, and you have the same system coming, and they look for those guys. They draft the skilled player and the guys who can move the puck and got hockey smarts. And you know about a guy like Gus Nyquist. And when you mentioned Tatar, he loves the game. Absolutely. He loves the game. Not a big guy, but boy, he's got a passion. And I think that's the bottom line. Guys who love the game, high skill level, think the game well, and that's who they're drafting. And you know, they're looking to get bigger, no doubt about that. And I think, you know, goaltending too. I think if they're going to take a goalie this year, if there's a big goalie out there, they're going to try and grab him. Just the same type of skill level, Brad. You know, that's what they've been going for, highly skilled guys who think the game well.
But they do more than that. They develop play-by-play guys. I mean, they do every facet of the game. It's covered.
Well, don't develop anymore. Leave the guy who's there now and leave the play-by-play guys out of it. This guy's still developing on his own. I'm trying.
Hey, Kenny, the one thing I'd say about Detroit that, you know, and they did it with Jeff Blashill by offering him or extending his contract, raising the value of it. For the players, Kenny Holland, who is so honest, I love the guy. Everything he said to me in the first meeting when I got there really transpired in front of me. As a player, you get yourself... And you lose a lot of sleep by trying to read between the lines. And I think in Detroit, the communication's key on both ends. But for a lot of those young players, when you're looking at guys, they sign a three-year contract. It's a two-way deal for the first 2 years with a one-way deal, you know, an NHL salary in the third year. So they're able to marinate in the minors and learn, knowing that they're going to get their chance rather than reading between the lines and wondering why the next guy was called up and why not me? I'm on a roll. Yeah. The guys in Detroit... It's so transparent. And I think that's the key for Detroit.
Absolutely. And you talked about, you know, guys in the past, and some thought, oh, Chelio stayed around too long, Draper around too long. Boy, they were done. But they brought in the young kids to learn from them, knowing they'd be in Grand Rapids, go back for a bit, come up, learn from these guys. And a perfect example in being loyal to people is Danny Cleary. Cleary had knee problems last year, couldn't really go, got slower, of course. But when he left that money on the table, Ken Holland promised him an opportunity here for 2 to 3 years with Detroit. Didn't really work out for Danny after one. But Ken Holland's going to sign him again with the knowledge that, hey, you may have to go to Grand Rapids. We may have to put you on waivers. I'm not guaranteeing you a spot, but there could be a spot when your playing days are done with the organization. So, yes, we'll look after you. And that goes from Danny Cleary to guys like you when you tell other people, what's it like in Detroit to play there? They're going to be honest with you. They'll tell you. They tell you they're going to look after you. They're going to look after you. Not to a detriment, but they'll try to find a way to fit you in, and true to their word, that's what they've done. And, you know, a guy like Adam Holmquist, who's a smaller defenseman, put up big numbers in Grand Rapids, probably isn't going to get an opportunity in Detroit, but they gave him the chances through the year to come up when you can. Nyquist was wondering, you know, why were other people called up before me? Well, because he couldn't go back down, but bide your time. Will give you the chance. Same thing with the Tar. Landon Ferraro could be in a tough spot this year. There's really no room for him. Might he move on? Yes. Guy like Tutu, right? Had to go. Ken Holland told him a while ago, I'm going to try to trade you. Where do you want to go? Couldn't make a deal, and now he's on waivers. He can go. So, yes, absolutely. True to their word to the guys who work there.
How frisky do you expect Ken Holland to be this offseason?
Well, the key is to get a defenseman. I'd love a guy like Dan Boyle. I think if you could get his rights from the Islanders, or if he goes to unrestricted, a nice two-year stopgap measure until some other guys are ready. Ouellette and Spruill will get opportunities this year for the Red Wings. Nick Jensen, Alexei Marchenko, a right-hand shot defenseman, is going to get a chance. But it leaves these guys, to your thought earlier, to stay in Grand Rapids longer. If you could find a guy like Boyle who can run a power play and be that right-hand shot, if not Alfredson comes back, doesn't matter. You get a guy like him that look at a Niskanen. I think more on the back end. As I say, there really isn't a lot of room up front to sign anybody, but I think a defenseman is key for this team.
And the challenge Kenny has is cap space. By the time you give the guys the raises that he's going to have to give, cap space is going to be a major issue.
Yeah, but I don't know, Major Doug, but he's got a lot of room right now. You do have an Alfredson bonus carrying over to next year.
Right.
I still say there's 12 to 15 million guys like DeKaiser, Tatar have to be signed, and there's a few other names in there. But really, they're not going to be big deals yet, and he's done a nice job giving the ice time. Prove yourself as you go along. I don't think he's managed to get himself into a bind with these lower contracts in the earlier years of players' careers. So I think he'll be okay. I think there's still some room, except if they, were able to land a guy like a Niskanen or Boyle and how much they want, shorter term for a guy like Boyle, but how much does he want a year? I think he'd still be okay in terms of space there with the guys who are leaving.
Hey, Kenny, what about Pavel Datsyuk? Obviously, he had some injuries this year. I think this guy's the best player that not only I ever played with, but played against. What he can do, I think he's still better than Jonathan Toews and Sidney Crosby. I think he's got that ability. The guys love him. He's a wonderful guy. You're privileged to watch him nightly in Detroit. What is your view of Pavel Datsyuk, and how much more does he have left in the tank?
Well, when you say privileged, I'm right there with you, because when those 40 games or so that he missed this year, and Zetterberg missed upwards of that too, it was almost sad going into a game. I just wait for Datsyuk to come over the boards and something magical happen, because usually it does at least once a night, if not three or four times. So that's a lot of fun for us. I think the question for Pavel was, that he probably did more rehabbing in January when he was injured and probably should have done nothing. And they miscalculated on that with the knee problem. He just needed rest. And then they thought when he got the rest and he was okay in the playoffs, certainly because he'd missed so much time, couldn't go as he normally does. So they opted not to have the surgery. It was just going to be rest, and they thought they'd be fine. If he needed surgery, it would have probably been 4 months rehab, would have had it right when the season was done. So they think, looking at it right now, there's no reason why he can't play a full season, and the knee is healing as it should without surgery. I'm looking most forward to seeing a guy like Zetterberg, who had the surgery, did well to come back earlier than what some thought, and he's had the nagging back issues now for 6-7 years. So to finally have that looked after, I think there's only an upside now, and I think both have a lot left in the tank, especially Pavel, as you know, Brad. You're the only one who worked out harder in the room than him.
the only reason why I worked out harder in the room is because they didn't let me on the ice, Kenny.
did he work out as hard as Ted Lindsay did?
Yeah, and I'm going for my own back therapy now, and I see Ted at the gym where he's there. He works out, Ted
like,
Lindsay.
Seriously, Ted Lindsay.
Hours.
It's amazing.
3 hours a day at the training room in Troy, and I'm there 3 days a week. And Mickey and I both are there, unfortunately, for our back issues. But we see Ted; he's going at it 3 hours a day. What an unbelievable man in his mid-80s!
It's amazing to see him in the weight room.
You know what's really great about Detroit and other teams? If they have this ability to bring in their old players, these guys are welcome. They come in, routinely, daily. Gordie Howe would be in the locker room. Ted Lindsay would be there. Come in, he'd sit down, have a coffee with you before practice or a game day. And when you're a young player or an older player like I was, and you have these wonder, like these greats, Hall of Famers that are there. Right. They're allowed in the room.
It's
and
like Nick Kiprios going around the Leafs locker room.
Well, you know,
or the Rangers.
Or the Ranger room, yeah.
Hey, there's a lot of teams that don't allow
their
veteran players or retired guys to come back and actually.
Hey.
This is a funny story. Kenny, you were there. I came in. Chris Chelios was playing with the Atlanta Thrashers. He was off. He came home or whatever for a few days, whatever he was doing. I walk into the locker room. Chris Chelios, I'm wearing his number 24. I walk in before practice, and Chris Chelios was in the hot tub. And he's going between the hot tub, the sauna, and the steamer. And he's riding the bike in the sauna, which he's legendary for. And I'm like, this guy's not on this team. But he's a part of Detroit, of course, forever. And Detroit just does it amazingly. I really believe that. But I was shocked to see Chris. He had his hands up, and he was in the hot tub. And the guys, you know, they didn't think twice about it.
Yeah, and he loves it, you know, and he just makes a lot of trips to Grand Rapids and helping out the defense there and working with Jeff Blashill. I don't think he'd want to be full-time. I think he's got too much fun going on in his life to be a full-time coach to replace Bill Peters for the defense. So it'll be interesting to see who the Red Wings get in that department. Yuri Fisher is director of player development for the Red Wings and does such a marvelous job with the kids, too. I don't know if he'd want it, but it'll be a neat hire. I'm sure there's a lot of people who'd like to work with this organization and be part of it, so it'll be neat to see who they hire.
It's an on-ramp, too. That's a bigger and better things in a lot of ways. Ken, you're a class act. Always appreciate talking to you. I know we're keeping you from golf, so we'll stop and let you get back out there on the links. Thanks so much for stopping by today, Kenny.
Thanks, Ken.
Teeing them up in 20 minutes, and it's raining every stinking day here. It's
thanks, Kenny. Best of luck.
Thanks, guys.
Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Datsyuk better than McGillney. He played with him, too.
Al McGillney was amazing. He could have scored 100 goals. He was so electric, but he was a not one-dimensional player. I mean, he was an amazing player. He could play every way, but he only needed the puck on his stick 2 seconds, 3 seconds, if that. Mm-hmm. He was a disher, give-and-go player, and electric. Pavel is a horse. He can lug the puck from one end to the other. He can slow it down, speed it up. I just think this guy's amazing every time I watch him.
Remember the YouTube video we watched last year of him?
There's 23 minutes on YouTube of Pavel Datsyuk, maybe the best compilation.
It's unbelievable.
I recommend anybody listening to actually go on and actually watch Pavel Datsyuk for 23 minutes. You would not be disappointed.
We got ahead of break. When we come back, we may have some news to pass along your way by way of a buyout. We'll check on a couple of things and come back with that and also talk to Dan Maher, director of NHL Central Scouting, the NHL Draft now. 7 days away. Stay tuned. This is Hockey Central, presented by Lexus on the Park on the Sportsnet television and radio networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at Noon, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard. Around the table, Brad May and Doug McClain. Some news to pass your way. Nick Kiprios confirming reports on Twitter. Brad Richards has been bought out by the New York Rangers. Now, he didn't have to clear waivers because he has a no-move clause. That's why he didn't go through the same process as David Booth, for example, of Vancouver Canucks. No one around this table is shocked, correct?
No, it was a tough situation for Brad and especially for Pat Morris, his agent, because they negotiated this deal and then the new CBA changed the rules. And so it made it a really tough situation for Brad and for Pat. And the Rangers simply, you know, didn't have a lot of choice. The good thing for Brad, I guess, is that it was so front loaded, this deal.
He got a lot in his jeans already.
He got a lot of money up front, but still, he's a proud guy. He's a Conn Smythe winner. He's a Stanley Cup winner. Brad would be pretty disappointed in this. And you know what? It's in fairness, it was just the way the deal was structured, and with the new CBA, had no chance. They had no choice.
With cap recapture, could have killed them down the road. Quick thought before we get to Dan Maher.
Well, my big thing for Brad Richards now, obviously he's proud. He wants to play. Yeah. This is done now. Where does he end up? Where does he land? Mm-hmm. Where's the fit for Brad Richards? And he got to the Stanley Cup Finals, and maybe he's lost a step. And his skill level, he slows the game down with guys with backside pressure, the speed in the game, and it's going to get faster going forward.
Shot's not the same too, Brad. We saw that in the playoffs. His shot's not the same.
He'll be a quality pickup, but at the right number. Now, what is that? Now, Patty Morris was my agent too, and there's no doubt when he went to New York, they figured that Brad Richards was going to be there for the, you know, the term and be a real difference maker. So,
well, they were lined up outside the Newport's doors trying to get him. I mean, let's not
everybody,
kid ourselves.
LA, the Toronto, LA Kings Calgary.
LA Kings were devastated they didn't get him.
It's true.
I mean, they brought in even Tim Lywicki came in to push it.
All the big boys came in. Okay, so there's the news. Brad Richards bought out by the New York Rangers today. 1 week away we are from the NHL draft. Dan Marr is the director of NHL Central Scouting. He joins us now. Dan, good afternoon. Thanks for being aboard.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
There have been a number of people who have said, regardless of who is selecting first overall, Aaron Ekblad will be the first choice. Agree or disagree?
I wouldn't argue it. We don't have that on our list, but lists are fluctuating all the time. Aaron Ekblad, he's a building block for any team, and you know, I don't know that anyone's calling the top end of this draft as franchise players, but he's certainly an anchor that a team will be able to improve and build upon as his career goes forward.
Dan, give me a, you know, everybody in hockey, every time this at this time of year, every GM sits and listens to his scouts tell him Aaron Ekblad is going to be like blank. Who's he going to be like?
When we go through that process, and, you know, we actually don't like to go through that process, but the name that comes up for our group is we're confident to compare him to be a Shea Weber-type player because we think the offensive side of Aaron's game is going to come out as he progresses through the National Hockey League.
Okay, so just a minute. There is a franchise player in this draft then. You just called him a franchise player.
That I understand corrected, but again, it's a projection.
Well, Weber's a franchise player, and if he's like Weber, yes, they should be lined up to get him.
If it's not Aaron Ekblad, would it be as simple as saying the next three or four players are very comparable, and it's going to be a guy that emerges from there going forward, but you can't select? I hear Sam Bennett's a terrific player. Obviously, Nick Ritchie's now in the mix. Dreisaitl is a big forward. But do they do anything extra special to separate themselves from that pack?
I think in our top four, where the remaining three would be Bennett, Reinhart, and Dreisaitl, I think all four of them will go in the top five of the draft. With Sam Bennett, you've got a player that knows how to compete with all his skills and intangibles. And with Sam Reinhart, you've got arguably one of the smartest players with a hockey IQ in this draft. And Leon Dreisaitl he could turn out to be a special player. He's got the power forward game. He's smart with his hockey sense. He's got a good offensive side to the game. His skill set's there. His skating is there. He could go number one, and that wouldn't surprise me.
Dan, Richie is getting a ton of conversation by a lot of teams. I saw him in the prospects game, and you know he sort of jumped out in that particular game. Is he a bit of a wild card here that this kid is really highly thought of by a lot of teams, and he may be a surprise on draft day where he goes?
Well, we have him seventh, and if he was to go higher again, like you're saying, I don't think it would shock anybody. There's always a focus on size, and he brings that to the table, but he's got a great shot. He's a deceptive playmaker. I don't know that he gets a – I think right now people are – when they look and evaluate him, that his skill set is very good for such a big guy. But he can also play that power forward game. He can protect the puck. It's hard to get the puck off him. So we have him at seven, but for him to go higher, it's certainly possible.
How many players from this year's crop, Dan, do you think can walk into the NHL next season?
I'm a little bit of the old school where I don't know that 18-year-olds can really step into the NHL, but for a guy like Ekblad and Dreisaitl who are more physically mature, and they are mature young men in their own right, for them to make a team out of training camp, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Hey, Dan, two questions for you. How important are analytics for you guys when you're scouting these players? Because obviously that's the new trend, Moneyball after that movie. In hockey, do you guys pay attention to that? And is it a huge factor playing at obviously the junior level or college ranks? Number one.
Well, I think analytics, the catch term right now that you can apply to a lot of parts of the game. I think teams have been doing that in their own right. They just haven't called it that. But when it comes to drafting, I think it's a good thing where you go back and look at your mistakes that you made, your reasons behind it. The only way to get better is to learn from mistakes. And you have to understand the direction that the game's going, the philosophy of your team. So there's a lot more intangibles involved when it comes to the drafting of the players.
Okay, well, my second question was, back years ago, Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff, late first-round selections who have turned out to be superstars in the National Hockey League. Do you see any of these players that are rated high? Obviously, we won't know until draft day. That might be the steal late in the first?
If you go back in history, Brad, like you said, I think that happens year after year after year. And the teams that are getting those players later in the draft, those players were probably listed much higher on their list than when they got them. It's just as you go through the draft, there's surprises, and teams take players for their own reason. So I think that happens every year. But this is one of those years, anywhere from 10 to 24 on our list, though those guys could go anywhere in the mix. But I do think even as you go further down into the top of the second round, you might see some players this year that will outplay players that are taken ahead of them.
Your job's a little like mine now. You never lose any games with your selections. Are you enjoying that?
That's the one benefit.
Are you enjoying it more than in Atlanta?
The pressure's not there.
Congratulations on a great job, Dan. You guys do a super job, and from I remember how valuable your lists were. So congratulations to your staff, and I know how much effort goes into it.
All right, thank you very much.
There he is, Dan Maher, director of NHL Central Scouting, 1 week away from the NHL draft next week in Philadelphia. And yes, Sportsnet will be there with a full crew to have you covered.
You're going to the draft.
You know what? To me, that's like Christmas morning. So 2 years in a row, I get to go to the draft. So it's
exciting.
It's a lot of fun for me. Yeah, absolutely. When you're drafting players, and you mentioned analytics as well, Brad, a lot of teams have said it's tough to use sort of analytics comparatively with kids that play in different leagues. Like how much is a Corsi stat in the Quebec League different from someone in Hockey East that's different from someone in the Western Hockey League? But, Doug, when you're looking at a player, what's the first thing you're looking for? When you're judging skill and where we're going to rank this guy, what's top of mind for you as a GM?
Well, skill is still the top thing. But
is that comparative? Like, skill in the Quebec League, does it translate to the OA? It's so hard.
Yeah, it's really challenging. There's no doubt about that. It is really challenging. But then you use every tool. It's like the psychological testing. Like some teams take it to the nth degree and they've got the team psychologist at the draft table telling them not to draft guys. I mean, so they're all tools you use, and you put all the information, you use every bit of information. I thought Jimmy Benning said it right. Analytics are great in scouting, except they don't measure competitiveness, character, and heart.
All those intangibles. Well,
they're
folks,
pretty important.
We are finger cooking lunch today. We ordered online at bostonpizza.com.
Oh, super.
Oh, dig in, Doug McLean. Over 100 delivery items to choose from.
I don't see it anywhere yet. Where is it?
Boston. Normally, Doug has to count his fingers after Boston Pizza shows up. But
I got to give one shout out to Craig Nienhaus.
Ex-player
Craig Nienhaus.
The guitar player?
Hey, one of the best musicians. Just watched him at Dale Hawerchuk's event. Craig Nienhaus is the best. If you're out there, hire this guy. He's outstanding. Take care of our former buddies.
And another shout out then, Kenny Hornick, who's driving up to Muskoka right now, who is with you at that event, head scout for the Barrie Colts. Okay, that's it for us here at Hockey Central. Thanks for joining us back Monday at noon for more Hockey Central.